Tshuva is a glorious moment in human experience. It stretches our dreams, our horizons, our imagination. It affirms belief in freedom of choice, in the innate virtue of humanity, the desire to improve your station, to transform into something you're not, to transmute your fallen and broken world into a different reality. It's a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because it's a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't telegraph it as a mitzvah in the Torah the same way it's a mitzvah of lulav or mitzvah of tefillin. Because he doesn't want it to be just. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want our tshuva just to be a mitzvah, a chiyuv. It's inconceivable that we're not chayiv in tshuva. It's inconceivable to build a religious system without the opportunity for change, the desire for change, and the mandate for change. A life unexamined is not a life worth living. But tshuva has to be something optional, something passionate, something personal, something which we desire, which we initiate. And our minds are free to roam the range of possibilities. We're free to escape from the present and think about the past and how we re-engineer the past and re-landscape the past. And of course, we think about the future, where all this is landing on a personal level, on a national level. But tshuva can also be a little bit daunting, so aspirational, so ambitious, such high-minded dreams. Ambition in general can be very daunting. It's important to live with dreams. The Gemara says in Brachos that if you spend 30 days without a dream, you have to go to Zertinus, you have to fast. We don't follow this, don't worry. But our dreams define us. Our dreams are part of our identity, our ambitions, our desires, the changes we'd like to make in our lives. We once asked Rav Lichtenstein, Mori v'Rabbi Zichron Levracha, on whose thoughts so much of the Shir will be based, and I'll mention that in a few moments. What's healthy ambition and what's unhealthy ambition? He once told us that take a book and put it on the top shelf. If you can reach that book, if you stretch on your tippy toes, and you stretch your ligaments, and you push, and you almost lose your balance, that would be healthy ambition. But if the safer is higher than that, you'll never reach it. That's unhealthy. That's just intimidating ambition. That's tormenting ambition. So with tshuva, we struggle with that. We've got these idealized versions of tshuva, and we aspire for so much, and we should aspire for so much. Do we reach it? How do we feel knowing that we can't reach it? How do we feel after Yom Kippur knowing that we may not have reached it? I'm personally haunted by that. After every Yom Kippur, I spend a couple hours processing in my mind. How did it go? Was my tshuva accepted? One of the components of my Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, which I missed most without my Rosh Yeshiva, who have since been nifter over the last 5 years ago, is I looked at them after Yom Kippur and just looking at their glow, at their halo, at their radiance, I knew that I'd spent 24 hours with them in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I stood next to them and I felt as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would give me an audience and he'd listen to me. And I walked away with a confident sense that my tefillos had been accepted and a confident sense that I would live to see another year. I don't have that confidence anymore. I'm riddled with doubt. I'm riddled with uncertainty. And I'd rather be honest to myself rather than cover up my uncertainty for a shallow substitute of false confidence. So I'd like to address this question. And I'd like to address this question through the tone of Rav Lichtenstein's Sefer. So much of that Sefer, it's called Return and Renewal, a collection of his lectures. It's really about this issue, carving space for middling and mediocre forms of tshuva. Even if tshuva won't be quintessential, perfect, idealized tshuva, what are the levels? A lot of the ideas are mine, but they're based on so many of the thoughts and the inclination and the spacing that Rav Lichtenstein creates in this Sefer. The Rambam begins source number one describing the mitzvah of tshuva, but he doesn't articulate the mitzvah in the same classic legal fashion. Here are the parameters, how much chametz, how much matzah, how tall the lulav. He's very vague. There's a well-known machlokus whether there is a mitzvah to perform tshuva, what the Rambam felt. Of course, this machlokus stems from the murkiness and the ambiguity of the psukim, as I mentioned before. The Torah doesn't come out and say it. We can find a pasuk in E7, we can find another pasuk in E7 with this pasuk, but Torah is very, very vague about the mitzvah of tshuva, in part because the Torah wants to alleviate, not alleviate, but mute or diminish the actual mitzvah part of it so that the human voice can arise. It's something we want and we need and we desire and we're soliciting of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, rather than kafalem harkagigas, perform tshuva because it's the time for tshuva. I think there's another reason the Rambam doesn't describe the mitzvah of tshuva, because describing the mitzvah of tshuva would create this very clear box with definitions. And what happens if you don't meet those criteria? Are you performing the mitzvah of tshuva? And I think the answer is the mitzvah of tshuva is very versatile, very, very flexible. It's a band, it's a spectrum of different colors and moods, rather than the mitzvah. So that's why the Rambam doesn't describe the mitzvah of tshuva. But I think there's a different Rambam that I'm very drawn to. And to appreciate that Rambam, you have to see the Gemara and how the Rambam transforms a phrase in the Gemara to a very, very different meaning. The Gemara source number 3 talks about a Baal Tshuva. Now that phrase, Baal Tshuva, at least in the simple meaning and in the way I think the Gemara takes it, refers to a high level of identification with Tshuva. I'm a husband, I identify very deeply with my wife. I'm an owner of things. Baal means sometimes an owner. I identify, these are not just possessions that come and go. I own my land, I own my house, I own my car. These are possessions that I create relationships with, that I identify, they forge my identity, they shape my identity. And the Gemara discusses a Baal Tshuva. And Chazal talked about a Baal Tshuva, Makam Shabali Tshuva Omdim Tzadikim Gemurim Enim Chom Lamad. And the Gemara's definition of a Baal Tshuva is this idealized, aspirational, successful, almost heroic Tshuva, a person who sins. The Gemara in Yoma, source number 3, describes a sexual crime. And who's the Baal Tshuva? Number 1, 3 times. He goes through the experience 3 times and he abstains. It's very impressive. It's very, very valiant. And it's exact same chait, same passion, same desire, same context, same psychological pressures. Can any of us be certain that we could achieve that level of tshuva? But that's the Baal Tshuva. What about someone who isn't a Baal Tshuva? What would we even call it? What's the space for that person? Well, Gemara is silent. This is a Baal Tshuva. This is the Baal Tshuva. So when the Rambam paraphrases this Gemara, source 5, this is in the Rambam Hilchos Tshuva, he introduces 2 novelties. One is he changes that phraseology. There is an idealized tshuva. We should all strive. We should all have ambition. The city for us, tshuva stretches our dreams, stretches our imaginations, broadens the horizons of human identity, broadens the range of possibilities. It's deep, it's tall, it's large, it's panoramic. And we should chase those dreams. But those dreams he calls, source number 5, Ezohi Tshuva Gemura. And then he paraphrases the Gemara, the same situation, proper motivation, virtuous intent. But he calls that Tshuva Gemura. A little bit later he calls it Tshuva Me'ula. High grade, highest level, Gemura, complete, Me'ula. High caliber, special, unique. That phrase, Me'ula, Gemura, implies, well, there's also tshuva she'ina Gemura. There's also tshuva she'ina Me'ula. So by switching out the phrase of Baal Tshuva, which doesn't allow, if you're either husband or not, it's binary, either you're in or you're out, he creates leveling. He creates gradations, striations. There's Gemura, there's Me'ula. Right now, without differentiating between Gemura and Me'ula. And then presumably there's Eina Gemura. And we'll discover today some of the Tshuvos She'enos Gemuros. And fascinating. Look at the second to last line of Source 5. The Rambam writes, those people who don't reach Tshuva Me'ula, Mo'ela Slow, it's still effective, and they're called a Baal Tshuva. So the same phrase, which in the Gemara is elitist and aristocratic and reserved for the champions of Tshuva, the Rambam pencils in that phrase for the average, common, yeoman, beinoni, middling, mediocre person who tries but doesn't always reach the tshuva gemura or the tshuva meula. And this is the tone of Rav Lichtenstein's book. Let me start with a phrase of his, a quote of his, and then we'll start to contour the various levels of tshuva she'ina gemura. This is source 6. When tshuva is successfully completed, it has an elitist tinge. Ba'alei tshuva, line number four, constitute a sort of spiritual aristocracy. They're the heroes. Bakum shebaalei tshuva omei tzadikim gemurim. These persons are baal tshuva. It elicits such admiration, such adulation, such respect. But Rav Lichtenstein has three issues with it. Number one, it's morally troubling. What is in or out? You're either perfect or you fall to the curbside. Line number four, is it enough to disqualify one from the ranks of the pure because of some slip-up, line number two, is a minor misdeed or impure? Line number six, such rigid classification feels almost oppressive. Religion is meant to be a weight, meant to be a mission, meant to be a burden. It's meant to be so oppressive, all or nothing, in or out, baal tshuva. If you don't perform that three-time abstinence in the exact same condition. Number two, it's such a standard of perfection, four lines in the bottom, it's likely to deter many people from pursuing Tahara, talks about Tahara, purification, tshuva. Will I ever reach it? And if I won't reach it, maybe I won't begin, because very often we don't begin projects we have no hope of achieving. Next page, the end of seven. It weakens the resolve and determination of Baalei Tshuva. If one indeed asserts that Tahara, a higher level of tshuva, is a prerogative of the elect, and there's no middle ground between blemish and unblemish, should the Beinoni simply lower his spiritual standards in general, contenting himself with a middling spiritual life in general and a middling tshuva in particular? This is a synopsis of Rav Lichtenstein's book. This is what I feel the Rambam is trying to resolve for us. And this is what I'd like to help resolve today. What are those stations in this journey? We're all on a journey. It's a lifelong journey. We hope to travel as far on that line as we can to our terminus, to our destination. But we don't all get there, and we don't all get there at once, or we don't all get there at all stages of our lives. But there are stations. And sometimes we have to be thankful and confident and spiritually gratified based on the stations that we visit. What are those stations? So first of all, sometimes tshuva is very, very inchoate. It's very slight. It's a tint. It's a whisper, it's a glimmer, it's transient, but it's still valuable. The Gemara in Kiddushin, source number 8, a person marries a woman. Now, marriages in halacha can be conditioned upon certain contingencies. I could say, I'll marry you if it rains tomorrow. If it doesn't rain, the marriage is invalid. I'll marry you if you pay me money. If the payment isn't rendered, it's called a tanai. And conditions can frame any form of marriage. You can marry on condition that, on condition that, on condition that. What happens if a person, surly, unscrupulous, seemingly sinner, marries a woman? Not a good shidduch, but he marries the woman, and he says, "I'm menasha ani tzaddik. I'm marrying you on the condition that I'm a tzaddik." And this condition is clearly, clearly off. It's a clear no. On, off, yes, no. It's a clear no. He's not a tzaddik. So we think the Kiddushin is invalid. He's not a tzaddik. The Gemara says it's a valid Kiddushin. Shema, hear her tshuva b'daito. Maybe he had a glimmer, a thought of tshuva. Hear her. Even if we never act upon that tshuva, it just is something that we passes through our mind. It's a flirtation. It's a deep desire. It's a deep level of will or intent. It flashes into our mind, and then our defense system shuts it down. Our fear avoids it. Our religious cowardice flees from it. He's considered a tzaddik, again, for the legal purposes of Kiddushin. I'm not sure if he's in the express lane to Gan Eden, but he's a tzaddik as far as his legal conditioning is concerned because of the Hirur Tshuva. And the truth is, Hirur Tshuva doesn't even have to be that cognitive. This presumably is a cognitive thought. He's marrying. It's a momentous occasion. He's thinking about his future. So at the chuppah, maybe a minute before the chuppah, there's some introspection. There's some accounting. He says, you know what? In his mind, doesn't articulate it, doesn't share it with anyone, doesn't accept guilt. It's very, very minimal. But he says, I want to be a better person for this marriage. And then he goes to the smorgasbord and it all disappears and the marriage begins and it all fades. But it can even be less than that. The Ramban, source number 13, comments on the Psukim in Devarim Parak Lamed Aleph, source number 11, In which Hashem is angry with us, line number 3, Hashem hides his face from us. The Amar, the end of source 11, the first paragraph, Vayamahu, people recognize, you know why Hashem's angry? Ki ein Elokai bekirbi, because we've distanced Hashem, we've evicted Hashem from our lives, Mitzauni Haros Elo, that's why we've been battered, that's why we've been persecuted. That's considered a level of tshuva. The Ramban writes, source number 13, Hu hirhor vicharata. They're upset and remorseful about their betrayal via kiru kiyashem, and they know it's even less than this chasen. The chasen and kiddushin memtes, it's cognitive, it's intent, it's a hirhor. You can even have less than a hirhor. It's an acknowledgement, which is less. Hirhor is I plan for the future. Acknowledgement is, yeah, it's about me. There's something off. I feel like Hashem's not with me. That maybe is why I'm suffering. Again, look at the pesukim. The Amar Bayomahu Halo Ki'ina Lukim Bekirbi Mitzoni Harosei. You know why we're suffering? Because Hashem. Why is Hashem not with you? Is it your fault? Is it? It's not even that. The Ramban, I think, I don't say inflates it, but I think gives those people too much credit. He talks about charata. He talks about accepting guilt. I don't see any of those in the pesukim. It's just recognizing a situation. It's even more murky and more subterranean than the hero or truth of the Gemara and Kiddushin. But the common denominator is there's no confessional, there's no process of tshuva. It's just an internal awareness. And it counts. And you're considered the tzaddik, at least legally in the Gemara and Kiddushin. And the Ramban talks about how the continuation of those psukim, which I just read, the continuation of the psukim in Parshas Nitzavim, are less of persecution and less punitive and less harsh, because even though there hasn't been a full tshuva gemura, there's still something off. There's a recognition internally, deep down. It's inchoate, it's amorphous, it isn't formed, it's incognitive, it doesn't have language to it, but it's deep within the heart. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Amarino, Zin Hashem, Bina Gigenu. Don't just listen to our words, don't just listen to our voice, Shema Kolenu. Listen to the parts of my heart that I don't even know how to listen to myself. But I know there's something ricocheting in there. I know there's something banging around in there. I can't get it out because it's covered by too much deceit and too much denial and too much delusion and too much fear. But climb down there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't want to climb up to Shemayim. I want you to climb into my heart and listen to my Hagigah. Listen to my Hagigah Slibi. Listen to what's in my heart that I can't even say. I can't even think. It's not even a hearer. And that's one level of partial tshuva, where it's in your heart, in your mind, different levels of clarification and different levels of concretization. Number 2. What about someone who is not just thinking, planning, considering, flirting, hoping, but actually articulates, says, vidoy. Imagine the Rambam, source number 1. Where is it here? The mitzvah of the Rambam. Where there is or isn't the mitzvah for tshuva, there's clearly a mitzvah to perform vidoy. Vidoy is quintessential, central, is primary to the whole process of tshuva. What about someone that commits or performs vidoy, confessional, but without the full conviction? I won't say duplicious. I won't say he's lying, he's deceiving, but again, honesty and duplicity is not an on or off binary all or nothing process. It's a spectrum, and obviously if a person is pure lip service, it's a sham, it's a show, then it's worthless. But what about people who can't bring themselves to remorse, can't bring themselves to disappointment in self, but they ask them, are you guilty? I'm guilty. They'll say the word guilty into their shoulder. They can't even say the word guilty, but there's some wince. There's some sadness, some something. So the king of flawed confessions is Cain. Cain's a murderer. It should be pretty obvious. And Hashem confronts Cain. And Cain is insolent. Cain deflects. Cain is looking for self-acquittal. But Cain is called a successful tshuva performer. You take a look at source number 8. Vayomer Cain. Cain tells Hashem, Gadol avoni minso. Oh, yeah, what a vidur. 3 words. He's asking Hashem, he says, is my sin so large that you can't bear it? You created the world. What's the big deal? So I sin, you carry.
I fail. You overlook. I murder. You forbear. You're HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You carry everything. You carry the whole world. Who would in their right mind dream for such a tshuva? It's insolent. Chazal referred to him as Gonev Das Elyon, source number 9. Vayetzi Kaim Lefnei Hashem. Chazal, in a very, homiletic association, compares Kayin to Vayetzi Haman by Yamahu Samech V'Tov Leif. You know, Kayin's like, you like Haman. He just wants to continue his lifelong party, his lifelong intoxication. Okay, fine. My tshuva. Am I finished now? Can I leave now? Yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepts the tshuva. Source number 9, that same medrash. He meets Adam HaRishon, who just didn't imagine tshuva. And look, we're thousands of years down the pike, so to us, we've been taught about tshuva. We've been taught by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We've been taught by Moshe. We've been taught by David. We've been taught by somebody about like tshuva. Adam just couldn't conceive of it. It was not something in his wheelhouse. So Adam meets Cain after he murders Hevel, and he says, "Amalo manase bedincha." Source number 9, line 4. What happened to you, Cain? I got expelled from Gan Eden. What was your punishment? So Cain says, source number 9, line 4, "Asisi tshuva v'nis pasharti." I performed tshuva and I got some clemency. Amarlo, so Adam says, "V'kachi atshuva gedola." Wow, such is the power of tshuva. Tov la'odos Lashem. This is the greisa tshuva of Cain that Adam. There's no Rambam yet. There's no Moshe Rabbeinu yet. This is the only model of tshuva. Adam is in awe of Cain's tshuva. What does Cain have? Cain has three things. Articulation. He says it and he makes it more graphic. And there are many things we refuse to say in our lives, but when we say them, they carry a potency that didn't exist before we articulated them. Number 2, he recognizes the gravitas and the heaviness. It's not just... psychopaths don't even realize it's a crime. They just walk by, nothing happens. So he understands that it's heavy. He wants to deflect it to Hashem. And he identifies with himself as a tshuva. He says, tells Adam, I perform tshuva. As weak as it is, as lame as it is, he tells Adam, Asisi tshuva. Well, the same story repeats itself after the first Beis HaMikdash. The first Beis HaMikdash, the Jewish people, Aron Bavel, feel very bad. First Beis HaMikdash, the end of the first Beis HaMikdash, terrible period, very low period in Jewish history. Murder, idolatry, sexual promiscuity, and then especially the sexual aspect became very, very amplified, very, very exacerbated in Bavel. We see what Bavel was like. We see what Parzim Bavel was like, the pornography, the sexual crassness, the Achashveros. This is the world the Jews were in. And it appears as if they all were intermarried. And Ezra is heartbroken in the confessional. And finally, 70 years after they leave Jerusalem, 70 years later, source 14, Daniel, finally, this is the first time. 70 years. This is the first year of Daryavash ben Achashverosh. It's not clear which Daryavash, which Achashverosh. By and large, this is 70, 52 years after they leave Jerusalem. Finally, about 70 years after the first stage of Yehoyakim's galus. 70 years later, finally, Daniel is reading the books, source number 14, and Ve'etnat panai al Hashem Elokim, and I turn to Hashem, to daven, to pray, with sackcloth, with fasting, Ve'espalala al Hashem Elokai ve'esvade, and I will confess, Ve'omara hana Hashem akel agadol agibor ve'anara asher chatanu avinu hershanu, phrases that are familiar to all of us from Tachlon, from Slichos. 70 years pass and no one confesses, at least no one on record confesses. And then it leads eventually to Ezra and Nehemiah leading a mass confessional, but you don't get the sense that it was a complete transformation. You get the sense of a lot of confessing, but not a commensurate amount of improvement. And the Ramban reminds us, this is the Ramban source 10, we're going a little back, based on the Pasuk in source 7, this Vadu Asavonam, Hashem already prophesizes that this will happen. This is a pasuk in Bechukosai, which at least according to their mind is a prophecy about this mass confessional after the return from Bava with Ezra and Nehemiah. They'll say, Vidui. Yes, and what will happen after the Vidui? They'll change, they'll reform, they'll improve. The pasuk doesn't say that. The Torah doesn't say that after they confess, they'll improve. So the Ramban senses this. Source 10, Begam lo amar sheyashuva b'tshuva shleima. I didn't say they'll perform a complete tshuva. Rak, shesvado avonam, they'll confess. Umasinu Anshe Bayisheni, this was the second Beis HaMikdash people, generation, They confessed. They learned it from the Torah. Was there a tshuva? No. Was there a sincere turnaround? No. But at least they confessed, and it wasn't a sham. There was some level of acknowledgement. Kayin, the first level is just thought. Inchoate, amorphous, undeveloped, passing in, out. Doesn't anchor itself in words and speech. It isn't graphic. It's distant. When you confess, when you articulate, it becomes graphic, vivid. There's some degree. You understand the heaviness. Kain says, God al avonim min so. It's insolent. It's disrespectful. It's chutzpahdik. It's babyish. It's infant. But it's a tshuva. And if that's all we reach, then we're right standing alongside the people who came back from Babel. As the Ramban describes their paltry tshuva, but still a tshuva that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes in Parshas Bichotosai, and even accepts. So one level of tshuva Sheina Gemura is just the thoughts of our heart, the desires, even the desires we can't fully formulate. The second level is our confessional. The third level is, can we feel guilt? And not just guilt, but hurt and pain and shame, and darkness. Even if we can't summon the strength to imagine a better self. I find myself sometimes stuck. I don't know a way out. I can't guarantee. But I just feel very bad and very low. And it's not just a confession, and it's not just remorse that the confession delivers. And the Rambam describes the emotional landscape of tshuva. We are accustomed to the emotional landscape being remorse, confession, desire to improve. Charata, vidui, kabbalah lasid. Problem with that is it can become very cyclical, very clinical, very sterile. I feel remorse for a lot of things. I think I had 2 cups of coffee this morning. My stomach's hurting me a little bit. I was very tired. I feel a little bit remorseful. Maybe I should have 1 cup. There's no mortification about that. I feel remorseful. I was at Meshever Brachos last night. I had a little bit too much chocolate mousse for dessert. I like dessert. I'm remorseful. Maybe I shouldn't. I'll have to work out a little bit more. I made a wrong decision. I'm remorseful. But is there a breakage? Is there a feeling of loss, of melancholy, of despair, of disappointment, of deep-seated, even embarrassment? When the Rambam describes the process, source number 16, he says, Ketzam mispadim omer ana Hashem chatasi visi pashati lefanecha ve'asisi kach v'kach v'reini chamti u'boshti. In order for tshuva to be passionate and powerful, there has to be a break of self. The self has to end. Yonah dies, and then he's reborn. He's swallowed by a male fish, and he's regurgitated by a female fish. His tomb becomes a womb, but you have to first feel entombed. David HaMelech hears about his sin. He knows he sinned, but when Nasan HaNavi walks into the room, he just can't breathe. The sin sucks the air out of the room. But Yomer David al Nasan HaNavi, source 17, Chatasi Lashem. 2 words, and he can't say anymore. When's the last time you said something and you lost your breath and you couldn't speak anymore? And if you look carefully at Surah 17, the Parsha ends. See that little Samach? If you look inside the Tanakh, you'll see the Parsha ends. There's nothing to say. And then Nasan HaNavi tries to help him rehabilitate. So much of tshuva is trying to find that night, that darkness, that melancholy, that dispiritedness, that breakage, that destabilization. We're stable people. We have coping mechanisms. We're balanced. We have equilibrium. But that's our enemy during tshuva. It's not a walk in the park. It's not a calm process, a moral inventory checklist. It's not New Year's resolutions. It's not I will be better, I should be better, I can be better. That's New Year's. It's descending into whom you are, whom you could have been, burying or mourning all the people you've buried, all the potential yous that you've buried that you can no longer fully recover, but trying your best to recover as best as you can, saving as many of the yous that you've buried and putting them on the lifeboat because the ship is sinking and you can't stop. You spend your whole life clogging holes. So just get a lifeboat and try to save as many, rescue as many people as you can. So can we reach that? Is there an internal world? The Gemara says, source number 18. You feel shame. Kol hosa davar avero misbayesh bo. You know, I think a lot of people listening to this year don't even know what shame is. Sadly, we live in a world, and I don't mean embarrassment. Embarrassment is you slip on a banana peel in front of your friends, and it's really embarrassing. You know, your fly is open, your zipper is open, and you're standing up, and that's embarrassing. That's not shame. It's shame. Shame is deep. It's existential. It's soulful. I'm ashamed of. It's not embarrassment. Is you're embarrassed in front of others. Shame is more internal. It's an internal conversation. You're ashamed of yourself. It doesn't need any other onlookers or any bystanders or any spectators to generate shame. Shame is something very deep. It's your conscience reminding you of your better self and of your utter failure and inadequacy in reaching that self. And you just feel mortified, angry. Even you're angry. And Yirmiyah talks about banging yourself on your legs. I'm angry. I'm angry at myself. Why did I become that? How did I become that? I'm angry at myself. Can you get there? If you don't get there, then tshuva just feels very cyclical, year in, year out, year in, year out, year in, year out. Moral inventory, moral inventory, moral inventory. The way to break that cycle is, that's the third level. If you fully, fully committed, do you believe in yourself? I don't know. But you feel more shameful than Kayin. You feel more shameful than the second the people in the first base of Mikdash. You feel more shameful than people of Ninveh. We'll read on Yom Kippur, Minchta, people of Ninveh, source number 31. It seems like they're confessing. They seem pretty sincere. But it feels very procedural. It feels very legal. They heed Yonah's message. They decree a nationwide fast. Sackcloth, young, old people. It's like the inclusiveness feels a little bit dispassionate, feels a little bit legal, feels a little bit almost staged. Vayiga davar ha-melech Ninveh, so he finds out what he didn't find out before. Like that, it seems as if there's a ceremony. By the way, King Ninveh, we're now. Oh, so he stands up. Vayakom mikiso, vayavar darta me'alav. He takes off his robe and he puts on a sack. It's a ceremony. Or the royal ceremony. The king will now engage in the official sackcloth. Bring the official sackcloth to the king and take off the official robes and put on the... It just feels very ceremonial. And the ceremonial nature of it, look who else is involved. Vayazek, Vayama, Beninve, Mitama, Melchuk, Dolab. This is a decree from the king. This is what you should do. Hadam, Ba'abema, Bakar, V'atzon. Animals should also wear sackcloth. Animals should fast. It just feels very top-down, very formal, very dry. There's no future of how it will change. Just let's go through. But it feels sincere. Just there's no desire for change. It feels like this is what we have to do. This is if X and Y. This is how we have to respond to this threat. This is how we have to avert disaster. And that's the Kayin place. There's sincere confessional, but how much of a desire? How much of a shame? There's no shame here. I don't see any shame in... The Rambam talks about shame. The Rambam talks about mortification. David HaMelech. If you're looking for two prakim to read before Yom Kippur, read Lamed Ches, read Nun Aleph. It's dark. It's ugly. It's toxic. It's infected. It's black. It's bleak. It's shame. It's embarrassment. It's hiding your eyes. It's anger itself. It's hopelessness. It's a lot deeper than just remorse for the extra cheesecake I ate last night. Even if it doesn't translate into how the future will unfold. There's just pain. And Hashem takes our pain. Next level of tshuva. She'ina gemur. I'm just looking at the clock. I don't want to make sure I don't exceed my time. We all face the following conundrum with tshuva. Rav Lichtenstein called it the Sisyphean nature of tshuva. Sisyphus was punished in Greek mythology to constantly push this heavy boulder up the insurmountable mountain. It's constantly rolling down. So repeat every year. Nachamal, Nachamal, Nachamal. Depending on how old you are when you're listening or watching this year. But we all know how this movie ends. I've seen the movie 53 times. Now I'm 54 years old, so I haven't really seen it. I've seen it at least 40 times. And I've seen 40 different movies, 40 different years of my life. Not that many endings have been different. Pretty boring movies. Every year ends more or less like the year before. I'm right back where I started, laden with the same flaws, carrying the same burdens, taunted by the same imperfections, befuddled by this maze of who I am and trying to find my way out. And I want to be a hypocrite. I want to stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and cry crocodile tears and sanctimony and false pietude. And I want to be real. And if I know that next year, Mirat Hashem, if I live, the movie's going to end the same way, so what value is there to my tshuva this year if I know I'm going to fail and fall? So there are a lot of answers to this question. That's really a shiur onto its own. But I think one of the answers is that tshuva is incremental. And Rav Lichtenstein spoke about this a lot. And if you take a look, one of the imageries of tshuva, source number 21, is Im Yadimu Chatola, a very famous pasuk in Yeshaya, Katsemer Yiyu, we'll whiten it like wool. And part of whitening wool is when you launder clothing, you know the clothing will be soiled again, but next time the laundry process will just be eased by the previous round of laundry. So if you just let clothing get very, very dirty, it's extremely hard to scour them and to rub them and to remove the blotches and the blemishes. But if you constantly launder the clothing, then each round is successively easier. And I think we revisit our past journeys of tshuva, but we feel as if it's a little bit easier. The land has been plowed a little bit. It's less difficult. We have easier access into our inner hearts. We know ourselves better. So even if I end up in the same place next year, my efforts this year should in some way facilitate my process next year. So there's an incremental nature to tshuva that I think consoles us from the specter of hypocrisy that could haunt our tshuva and I think deflate our interest. But part of it is as follows. I call it the pill test. Sometimes boys apply to yeshiva and they ask me, Rabbi, I don't want to learn. So I say, what if I gave you a pill and you'd want to learn? Would you take the pill? If they say yes, then I tell them you probably want to learn. This will be a good place for you. If you're not sure if you take the pill, then you're not sure if you want to learn. And maybe this is not the best environment to trigger that early level want to learn. I think the same pill test applies to Yom Kippur. When I reach whatever level of authenticity and depth I reach, I ask myself, if I could take a pill right now and lock in this sincerity and have all my tshuva dreams actualize and fulfill and materialize, would I take the pill? And the answer is obvious if I could lock it in. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I want it. I may not be able to reach it because I'm mortal and I'm flawed and I'm limited and I'm weak and I'm frail and I'm brittle, but I really want it. And you know that I want it because you're in my heart. So judge me by that, not what unfolds the rest of this year. Judge me by what's in my heart. And judge me by who I am right now on Yom Kippur. If you take a look at the Rambam captures this in source 19 and 20. These are two selections in Perek Beis. Umay ha-tshuva she-yazov ha-chote cheto v'yasir v'machshavto v'yigmar b'libo. You've made that determination in your heart. V'yigmar b'libo she-lo yaseo od. You know you don't want it. You also know that it may not come true. You may return into the cesspool. You may fall back into the mud. You may become sullied, you may become contaminated, but you wish you wouldn't, and you know you don't want to, and you're gomer belibo. The Rambam in the next halacha refers to the antithesis, person who's considered tovel v'sheretz b'yado, someone that just, there's no gemiris das, there's no gemiris halev, call him esvadr dun v'lo gomer belibo. So of course it's a sham, of course it's cant, it's just empty words, it's lip service. But if you're gomer belibo, sekadosh baruch hu rachman aliba bo, you have my heart. You may not have my limbs, you may not have my flesh, you may not have, I can't promise you those, but you have my heart, and that heart may change, but you have my heart right now, and you know what I want, and probably you know what I want better than I know, because I'm still riddled with uncertainty and doubt and self-abnegation and self-aphasia, but you know, source number 19, V'yayir alav yodea talumos, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows. He can testify. That's how deeply he knows. He could be an aide. That doesn't refer to most of us, but Hashem knows we're not going to return. No, Hashem knows that right now, the person we are right now, if we can just lock it in and freeze frame, that person will never sin. Good luck. But that person is going to be replaced right after Nila by different people. by different people with far less reserve and far less religious determination, but that doesn't matter. Because Hashem is saying Eidos on Yom Kippur, V'yad Alavi, right there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why it's not Yodea, but Yayin. Hashem says testimony. Testimony gets locked in. Right there, Hashem says testimony. That's how you solve the Sisyphean challenge in Tshuva. You reach the level of sincerity. It's not just the passing glance, the heror. It's not just the confession. It's not just the shame, but it's, this is something I want. Please take that desire and judge me based on that desire. That's the next level, where it may not come true, but you're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take your sincerity and your genuine interest as your identity, as your subject being judged. Then there's one last layer of imperfect tshuva. Not last, but there are many, many, many layers. And hopefully these are the stations we visit on our journey to, as close as we can, tshuva gemura, tshuva ma'ula. None of us, very few of us, I think, can ever reach a tshuva gemura, davarim. We hope. And it's trying to offset rather than just undo. Undoing is hard. People will see therapists, it's hard to undo your past, to rewire. And some of us are lucky enough and we get to do it, we get to understand ourselves. Some of us are not lucky enough, but sometimes we compensate and we say, well, I can't really solve this issue, but the hamburger doesn't taste that well, but I'll put some more ketchup on. And what's the ketchup we put on the hamburgers? Well, what do we cover it with? What do we try to say? Well, I may not be able to dig deep and to rewire it, but cover it up. I'll put some paint on it. Cover up the hole in the wall. I'm not going to say rebuild the wall. Put a bag over it. Cover up that ugly part on the floor. How do we cover up? So sometimes we ask for Hashem to cover it with love. We try to cover it with our love. V'kol pshay techaseh ahava. Mentioned before, the truth is compared to cleaning wool. It's also compared to snow. And the difference between the whitening effect of wool and the whitening effect of snow is that when we launder wool, we actually change its color. It changes from brown or black to white. When we cover something with snow, it doesn't change any color. We just give it a sheen, a glow, a radiance. There's this plate of shiny snow that creates a magical fairyland in which we make believe the world is clean and pure, and underneath there are rocks, and underneath there are sewers, and underneath there's darkness, and underneath there's dirt. But for a few moments, depending on where you live, the world just seems magical, and the world seems sparkling, and the world seems otherworldly, and it all fades, but at least. So we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu that our love should cover our failures and our flaws and our betrayals. But we also try to cover it up, not just by covering, but by offsetting. There's a very soulful vidui of Reb Sajigon, which we recite on Erev Rosh Hashanah. It's a little bit lengthy. It's at the end of lengthy slichos, but it's very, very heartrending. And to me, it distills the voice of slichos. You'd think the voice of slichos is about penitence and remorse and shame and everything I spoke about, but if you're paying attention to slichos, at least 50% of it is about Am Yisrael and its suffering and its tribulations. It feels more like kinos or slichos of Shivas or Nasar B'Teves than it does slichos for Yom Narav. Again, there is some prominent mentions of tshuva and chait, but a lot of it is our suffering. And a lot of it is asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if we fail, then A, understand us. We've been through a lot. And you know what? We've been through a lot on your behalf. It's not just incidentally, we're having a hard day. Can you cut us a break? Can you cut us some slack? But we've been here in this world standing for you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for a very, very long time. And it hasn't been a walk in the park. It's been difficult. It's been hard. We've been persecuted. We've been slaughtered. We've been murdered. We've been deported. We've been hated. And that has to count for something. To understand our failure. And also let that suffering be in place of whatever we deserve. Because we've suffered enough already. And it's our theme of the Slichos, and it's the theme of Reb Sajigon, and I'll just read it to you. Source number 30. I don't have a digital copy. Birvos Hashani Manu Nimatim on the bottom of the page. We just keep diminishing, and thank God, Jewish people, of being reborn and rebirth of our nation. But there's so many tens of thousands of days, people just saw a decline of the Jewish people. Beis kachena v'tifarteinu, second paragraph on the last page of Shayelis Reifas H. Rurei ki azlas yad. We don't have any strength left. Efes atzor v'yazov, who's helping us? Kol ha'goyim yoshim shleivim mishkit. I'm living in France. Everyone's thriving. I'm living in Spain, Spanish Empire. I'm living in Iraq. I'm living in... Everyone's growing. We're working around like a bunch of paupers trying to survive. I'm praying to your HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rebuild us. We're embarrassed. But in Meshev Aruch Techaper, are you looking for us to be broken? We're brokenhearted. We don't have to become brokenhearted. Living life as a Jew through the last 2,000 years, if you live Jewish history, it's with being a broken. Minat Saros, Minat Tlos, Shavro Leinu, Adashalona Sam, Sam Biv Sareinu. Please, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're broken. And that has to count for something. And even if we can't become that Baal Tshuva Gamor and Tshuva Gemura of the Rambam and that higher level of Tshuva the Rambam describes, you have to daven in 2020 different than you would have daven in 1020 or in 520 or quite frankly in 1920. Because of all the suffering and all the hardships and all the difficulty, what we went through as a people during the Holocaust was unprecedented, was staggering, was nightmares. What was the Tochacha? What's the Tochacha? You read the Tochacha in Kisava. We lived through the Tochacha. And we're still here. And we're not going anywhere. And we love HaKadosh Baruch Hu even when we can't understand Him. And Hashem wants our tefillos to be renewed. Obviously, we use the same text, and obviously, we draw on the depth of the Masorah, on the depth of who davened before us, and Otzu Chesed L'Alafim. But if we don't stand this year on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just look at who we are as a people, and at the very least, you decide when to bring Gula. That's your decision, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We desperately want it quickly. We're working hard for it. We're suffering for it. We're struggling on its behalf. We're sacrificing our lives so that it can come. You're the only one that knows when it will come. But at the very least, whatever we deserve, we've received. Now, I'm talking to people who didn't, by and large, live through the Holocaust by definition, and by and large weren't in Spain, by and large weren't in Poland in 1666, weren't in Spain in 15... That's just by and large. I'm a little tired today. It's everyone. Depends on what you live. Do you live in a little cell called your life? Or do you live in a landscape called Jewish history? And you feel 1492. And you feel 1666. And you feel 1940. And you feel the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So you stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, Rabbeinu Shalom, I, me, Moshe Yitzchak, Ben Shulam, I suffered that. So I may be weak, and I may be flawed, and I may be an embarrassment to you, and I'm certainly an embarrassment to me, but take this and offset this. Take all that suffering and offset. I'm trying, but I don't know if I'll ever reach that final station. But these are the stations on the way to the terminus. Can you feel that passing interest? I hope we can get beyond that, but even if you can't, well, you're the tzaddik of Kiddushin. You're the people the Ramban describes who just say, oh, the reason we're suffering is because we don't have Hashem, as we should, and that's it. Can you say vidui in a heartfelt way? Maybe you're ashamed, maybe you're not, but at least you're saying vidui, and it's serious, and it's sincere. Can you be disappointed? Can you be sad? Can you be melancholy? You may not create horizons for change, but you feel sad. Can you really want to change? And can you capture that person that has been gomer belibo and say, Hashem, here it is. You now know this is the person. Testify and judge this person. Can you be a gomer belibo? Can you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, well, we love each other. And when you love a different being, you overlook things and you cover things up. So can you cover up my sins with the snow? And can you travel through Jewish history and feel the suffering we've been exposed to and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I may deserve a lot, but quite frankly, we've already received a lot. So let our Shavira Slave be in place of whatever levels of personal Shavira Slav we're incapable of reaching. So this is the hope for Balei Tshuva that aren't full-blown Balei Tshuva. This is the hope that runs through Rav Lichtenstein Sefer, and this is the hope that I think we all clutch and grasp onto. As we're working our way through the thicket of life, as we're traveling through the dark forest of our fallen selves, as we're looking for rays of light, we may not get to that resplendent sunshine where Balei Tshuva and the world around us of Rav Kook is radiant with light, but there are many, many ways. And we have to acknowledge them in ourselves, celebrate them in ourselves, ratify when we've achieved them without being complacent and still striving for the terminus. K'siva k'sima tov, everyone.